Let's talk. Talk.
John Brown. From Romanov to Windsor, King Charles III's Romanov blood. Few people realise that King Charles is a direct descendant of the Romanovs, the dynasty who by 1917 ruled one-sixth of the surface of the earth. To tell us more about this remarkable story in a new book, From Romanov to Windsor, King Charles III's Romanov blood, is the author, Corinne Hall. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. Now, are you sitting in a palace, a regal palace in St. Petersburg this morning?
No, I'm sitting in a cottage in Hampshire, actually.
Well, that's close enough. That's close enough.
That's right, yes.
Now, many listeners might be sort of familiar with the fact that the House of Windsor was originally, it had Germanic blood, what with Saxe-Coburg and all that.
Yes.
And they might not think about Romanovs until they see pictures, perhaps, of the last Tsar and obviously the kings of England at that point. So tell us a little, if you can, give me a very basic introduction about how the Romanovs and King Charles III are related and linked.
Well, it's through Prince Philip, who was born a prince of the Greek royal family. And it goes back through his father and his grandmother to his great-grandfather, who was a Russian Grand Duke. And this Russian Grand Duke, Constantine, was the son of Tsar Nicholas I of Russia, which takes us back through Catherine the Great, Peter the Great, all the way back to 1613 and the very first Tsar, Michael. So it's through Prince Philip and his family, nothing to do with the Queen. Charles inherited his throne from Queen Elizabeth, but he didn't inherit any Romanov blood through Queen Elizabeth. It's all Prince Philip.
So that just goes to show how interlinked all the royal families of Europe are.
Yes, exactly. They are. And it's got quite complicated trying to draw up family trees for the book. I had to keep it as simple as possible. A, so the publishers didn't have a fit, and B, so that the readers could follow it. So it is very complicated, but it's all there. Prince Philip is is extremely royal compared with some of the others.
Now, one of the things about the Romanovs, and in fact, if you think, from Peter the Great onwards, is that they are always looking west for their links. They're always wanting to marry. They're certainly not looking sort of east to China or any other, or India or anything like that. So they're a Western thinking nation. Peter the Great wants St. Petersburg as his. He builds the canals in this swamp infested piece of land, which is as close to Europe as you can get it. Upsets the Swedes, no doubt, and that brings a downfall of the Swedish Empire, pretty much so. But also, it just goes to show how they are thinking, as a Western power, with Peter, isn't it?
Well, Peter the Great's father, Tsar Alexei, was very interested in Western culture, and he married a lady called Natalia Naryshkin, who started introducing Western customs because she'd had a Western, I think it was an aunt or stepmother, who brought some of these things over and sort of opened her eyes. So when Peter came along, he was sort of inured to opening up to the West. And it was Peter the Great who threw open the borders and said, right, we're going West. We want the land from Sweden. And he went to Russia, to Holland and to England and travelled all through Europe as well. And so he opened up Russia. He brought Western clothes, Western customs, upset a lot of people doing it.
To put it mildly.
Yes, making them shave off their beards, which was, unheard of in those days. And he opened up the whole thing to Western influences. So it was started with him. Then Catherine the Great, of course, took it further, conquering more land and getting more land for Russia and making it the Russian Empire as it then became. But it started with Peter the Great and his father that really opened it up.
Yeah, indeed. I just love the story that Peter the Great, goes to work in the shipyards in Amsterdam as a shipbuilder, yes, so almost incognito, with his group of mates.
He does, and the fact that he was over 6 foot tall made incognito a bit difficult, but he did it. And he learnt shipbuilding so that he could build the Russian Navy.
Mm.
And he learnt shipbuilding in Amsterdam and England. He was going to go on to Venice and see the gondolas in Venice. But on the way, news came of a rebellion in Russia. So he thought he'd better get home and save his throne instead. So he went home. So he never got to Venice. But he did travel widely and he did learn all sorts of things. He was very interested in technology. He would pull people's teeth out, for instance. He learned dissecting and all this sort of horrible thing. And he was interested in scientific discoveries. So he was very, very different to some of the earlier Tsars.
Because if you look, I mean, and for those who are wondering why the Russian flag looks like it does, it's because of the Dutch flag, and he turns it on its side, and voila, doesn't he?
That's right. Yes, exactly it.
But
exactly.
he is the Tsar that, you know, has this, and I can't remember. There is a bodyguard who have these wonderful sort of ballooning outfits, and they're always throwing revolts, and they have their large beards and the whole thing,
The Streltsy.
That's the one. Thank you very much. Right. And they're always so he gets rid of them in the end, doesn't he? Because they keep putting people's heads on spikes and whatever.
That's right. Yes, impaling people or throwing them down steps and impaling them. It's all pretty gruesome. I'm quite squeamish, so I didn't enjoy some of that bit. But
if you're going to write a history of the Romanovs and their links, a squeamish is not the thing to be because there's an awful lot of blood.
I wrote a book on royal women and nursing as well, and that was even worse.
So, I mean, people won't know this history. So how does it all link then to Greece? And obviously, I'm sitting in Spain, and of course, Queen Sophia of Spain, yes, originally, of course, comes from Greece. So they're all interlinked.
She was Prince Philip's cousin.
Yes. So how are they all... How does the Romanov line then continue and the links to Charles, as it were?
Well, from Nicholas I, yeah, he had a son called Constantine. Constantine's daughter, Olga, became the Queen of Greece. She married King George I, who was the first king of modern Greece, if you like, and, of course, was also an ancestor of your Queen Sophia. And George I's fourth son was Andrew, and Andrew was Prince Philip's father. So it all comes from there. But there's also another connection, because Prince Philip's mother was Princess Alice of Battenberg, and her mother was Princess Victoria of Hesse, a granddaughter of Queen Victoria. And Princess Victoria of Hesse's sister was the last Tsarina of Russia, married to Nicholas II. So Prince Philip was one of the closest living relatives to the last Tsar and Tsarina. So when those bones were discovered outside of Katerinburg in the 1990s and they wanted DNA testing, guess where they went? And Prince Philip volunteered, and he was quite happy to help and give a sample for the DNA testing to prove that these bodies were actually Alexandra and the children.
Because that's always been one of the great, you know, sort of Tsarist conspiracy theories, that one got away, or they're living on an island somewhere. But that has always been one of the great what happened to, wasn't it?
It went on for about 60 odd years until the truth came out of actually what really happened. And I'm sure there's still a lot that needs to be told now, but the basis of it was that they were buried in that grave just outside the Katerinburg in the forest. And when the bones were dug up and they were finally tested, it was found that the DNA matched Prince Philip and a couple of other relatives. So the DNA was there.
So when it comes to writing something like this, I mean, we're talking about a Tsarist, you know, Tsarist Russia for a start, and the complications there. And then you're talking about sort of pre-unification Germany and pre-unification Italy. And there are so many small, and Greece as well, people know. There are so many, you just said, you know, so-and-so of Hesse, so-and-so of Battenberg, and many people will only know Battenberg through the cake, obviously. So it must be a devil of a job to write this when you've got little, you know, you've got the Palatine and this and that and Hansard, I mean, all sorts of small principalities and, you know, bishoprics and whatever else going on.
Yeah, well, most people don't realise that Germany wasn't unified until 1870. So you had all these tiny little states, all with their own little grand ducal or princely rulers. A couple of them had kings and this sort of thing. And there was a king in Bavaria who built those wonderful palaces, and grand duke this and grand duke that. People don't realise that. And it was very similar in Italy and other countries. And it was only... during the 19th century, they all became unified. I mean, Greece wasn't even Greece because it was part of the Ottoman Empire, and they had to chuck the Ottomans out. So once they did that, they had then had started looking for monarchs. And people don't, they think of the countries as they are now.
Yeah.
And don't realise back then it was all different. So you had all these little princes and princesses of this and that. Great for royal marriages, but...
A little confusing for everybody. This is one of the things, because if you ever wonder, because, you know, again, I'm based in Marbella in the south of Spain, and it's a tough job, but somebody's got to do it. But there are not, you tend to find an awful lot of, you know, von Bismarcks, von Hohenlohes, you know, and princess of this and princess of that. And that's because of all these tiny principalities, etc.
Yeah, that's right. And it gets very confusing. So... Yeah, it is. It's a job knitting it all together, really. But once you get the hang of it, which I've been doing it for well over 40 years, you do get the hang of it. So I hope other people can.
So what do you think? I mean, many of us wouldn't even thought about it, because Prince Philip was always nicknamed, you know, Phil the Greek, and that was about as far as it went. So
what my mum used to call him, Phil the Greek.
Exactly. So does our present king, does he make allusion to perhaps his Romanov? I mean, is he aware? I mean, he must be aware of it, but does he sort
of... He must be aware.
Yeah.
But he's got quite a lot in common with him, actually, because if you think of it, he's got a love of art. Catherine the Great had a love of art, didn't she? He served in the Navy, and his ancestor, Grand Duke Constantine, did a lot towards naval reform in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Peter the Great founded the Russian Navy. So you've got that. And then you've got his interest in botany and gardening. And the wife of Emperor Paul, another ancestor, she had a professional interest in botany and gardens. And then, of course, the Russian palaces, you know, nobody can doubt that the interest in architecture was there. And look at Charles, always interested in architecture.
And gardens, obviously, as well. And, you know.
And as I said, the gardening from Emperor Paul's wife. Yeah. So he's got quite a lot of things in common with the line as it goes down. And it even really, when you think of it, religion. I mean, on one of his trips to Russia, he travelled up to an Orthodox monastery near the Arctic. And the very early Tsars were very, very religious. So you could see where the sort of Orthodox thinking, of course, Prince Philip was christened Orthodox, being Greek. So Charles has obviously inherited a bit of that as well.
Yeah, his approach to faith, and he does. I mean, Charles does, the king does sort of have a unique take, isn't it, on all faiths, as it were, rather than just saying, you know, as the head of the Church of England. But, you know, he harks back to again, we go to Ottoman, we can almost go to sort of the decision between that and the Holy Roman Empire, for goodness sake. And
that's
we're having real fun.
Yeah. So it's quite a lot of things he's got in common with them all. So quite interesting.
When you were writing this, I mean, how seismic a shock was the execution, the assassination of the Romanovs to royalty throughout Europe? Because it must have been a seismic shock.
It was on a par with the French Revolution, because of course everybody knew what happened there. And I think the likes of George V and his generation, they thought, oh well, you know, they've been deposed, they'll go abroad, they'll live somewhere, we don't want them, but somebody will take them. And that was a big problem, because they didn't want them here, and then France didn't want them. And then by the time they were sorting all this out, it was too late. The Bolsheviks had come in and they'd got them. But I don't think anybody realised what was going to happen. I don't think anybody believed they would be killed. They just thought eventually they'd just disappear into a far corner of Russia and just live their lives. And I think for a long time, people thought that's what had happened. You know, they sort of disappeared to a monastery somewhere.
Mm.
And in fact, I know that when they were under house arrest in Tobolsk, the imperial family were actually looking at having a house built in Tobolsk where they could live permanently. But nothing came of it. And then it was, you know, the Bolsheviks took over and that was the end of that. But they were actually thinking of just living their lives. Ideally, they would have liked to go down to Livadia in the Crimea. But, which is beautiful. I've been there.
But if you know how it goes, I mean, with again, Peter the Great and the, you know, I mean, Peter the Great executes his own son, for goodness sake. Yes. I mean, yes. So they don't want, and you know, and there are wives who get involved and legitimate children, and they're also getting either sent off to monastery, to nunneries, you know, under house arrest or bumped off. So, you know, the Bolsheviks couldn't afford to have the possibility of white Russians, not the drink people. I know it's Spain, but it's not that early, of white Russians, you know, rallying around, you know, the Romanovs and using the house as a base.
No, that's the trouble. They didn't want a live monarchist banner. So all the Romanovs in Russia, they had to get rid of. So they either, those that didn't manage to flee, were mainly executed. There were, I think it was 17 executed. So there were quite a lot. That was the only way they could get rid of them and not end up with a live monarchist banner for the white Russians to rally around.
Here's the thing. Okay, I just thought about this, and I do occasionally have thoughts. I know. Because obviously, I'm gonna sort of like drag us into the 21st century here with Russia at the moment. Because, you know, Putin's also going on about, you know, Great Russia. We're going to get back, and they hark to Peter the Great as this ideal, as the true Russian. But of course, this is perhaps a populist view of as they always do, sort of autocrats, and saying, you know, this is the true version of Russia, not knowing that there's a link to all the European houses and monarchies and etc. So, you know, do you think Putin or Russia at the moment realizes this link between sort of current Russia or Russian nobility, Russian czars, and Charles and other houses of Europe?
I'm sure they do. Sure they do, because they don't want their monarchy back, do they? So they must know that they're all intertwined. I'm sure they do realise that.
So what are you hoping then? What discoveries did you make during writing this tome? And I'm doffing my cap to you now. What you know? What did you discover? Because I also talk about, when I talk to authors about, they have a eureka moment when they write something and they go, ah, now I've got it. I can hang the rest of the book off this one. What was the thing that the spark that inspired this one?
What inspired it was the coronation. When everyone kept going on how Charles was descended from Queen Victoria, and nobody mentioned Christian the Ninth of Denmark, and I thought, well, that's not very interesting. And I thought, the Romanovs, that's interesting. People like the Romanovs. So I thought, that is it. And then I thought of the title, From Romanov to Windsor, and I thought, that's it. That's what we do. And one thing that did surprise me was how many trips Prince Philip and Charles had made to Russia. Prince Philip was going to Russia as far back as 1973. And just looking at the press cuttings and stuff, you find that they're taking these little trips. He did a lot in respect to the British Equestrian Foundation. Right. And Princess Anne was competing in various horse events. And he went to Kiev and she was competing in one there. And Charles, he was going as far back as 1994. And in 1994, Charles was the first Prince of Wales to visit Russia in 100 years, exactly 100 years. The last one was Queen Victoria's son, Albert Edward, who went for the funeral of Tsar Alexander III and the wedding of Tsar Nicholas II. So that was quite a historic thing. So I brought that in, and I had someone in the Crimea helping me find all the stuff, how Prince Philip went down to Sevastopol, the 150th anniversary of the Crimean War in 2004, and Charles's trips to St. Petersburg, the 300th anniversary of the founding. So they had been to Russia quite a few times. Princess Anne did a visit in the 90s. She was another one of the trailblazers. So very quietly, they have been sort of going out there.
Fascinating.
But of course, the Queen did this marvellous state visit. I put that in as well, because that was really good. I had all the press cuttings. So I put the state visit in. Couldn't resist that one.
What are you hoping that people are going to discover about the book From Romanov to Windsor?
That Charles has got different ancestry from just being descended from Queen Victoria. And the people keep on about the Germans. Oh, he's German and this sort of thing. But it's so much more than that. And that's what I want people to know, that the Russians are there as well, not just the Germans and anybody else that they might throw in. The Russians are very much there.
The book is called From Romanov to Windsor, King Charles III's Romanov Blood. If you go to our virtual bookstore on tre.radio, you'll see the rather handsome photograph front page. If you click on that, a well-known distribution service will wing that book to you wherever you are in the world. Currency, do you do the internet thing? Can people find you online?
I've got a website, yes, corinnehall.com.
The book is called From Romanov to Windsor, King Charles III's Romanov Blood. It's by Corinne Hall. Corinne, it's been absolutely fascinating to speak to you this morning.
Very nice. Thank you very much for having me, Giles.